everyone, and good evening, and welcome to Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and I am so excited and tonight about our show. First of all, I'm excited because it is Friday Eve. There are no Thursdays in my vocabulary. I always like to say Friday Eve. And adopt that, if you will. It really makes the end of the week and Friday just all the more exciting. And I'm also excited because before I came on air tonight, I was over in the chat room just kind of tooling around, and I noticed that a friend of mine who visits my show frequently is back tonight listening. Hello, Pam. It's so good to have you with us, so thank you so much. And I'm also excited because our guest, oh my gosh, I followed her for quite some time. I have been a fan of hers for a very long time, as I know many of you have. And so, you know, we're just thrilled to pieces to have her with us tonight. And I want to give you a little bit of background in case you've had your head in the sand for the last, decade or two. Our special guest has had a career that has encompassed motion pictures, television, music, and legitimate stage. And her debut film performance in Supergirl, opposite Faye Dunaway and Peter O'Toole, won praise from the most cynical of critics and launched her performing career. She went on to star in such films as The Legend of Billie Jean, Ruthless People, The Secret of My Success, City Slickers, Sticky Fingers, Lassie, No Way Back, The Steal, and Seeing Other People, among many others. I mean, I feel like I just took a trip down memory lane. Most recently, she starred in ABC's The Lion Game as Kristen Mercer, for fans of The Lion Game. As a guest star, she has appeared on such series as Seinfeld, Caroline in the City, HBO's Dream On, CBS's Michael Hayes, Will and Grace, The New Adventures of Old Christine, Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, Supernatural, and Smallville. She also is an accomplished musician, having released 4 albums, including the just-released children's album about Greek mythology called Myths of Ancient Greece. And tonight we are so very honored and proud to welcome Helen Slater. Hello, Helen.
Hello, I'm good. Thank you. My goodness, that was crazy hearing all my credits listed. I feel so accomplished.
Well, you are quite accomplished, and, you know, I always make a habit of doing that because, I get that a lot. I mean, people, I think, don't, who have done a lot like you have, I guess it's hard. You're so busy that you don't necessarily go back and recount everything you've done from A to Z, but my gosh, wow, it is, it's quite impressive, I must say.
Oh, well, thank you.
I want to thank you for being our guest this evening and for being here. I know you've been very busy of late, and so to give us your time for the next few minutes is just wonderful, and we really appreciate that.
Well, I'm so happy to be here and also to be promoting the children's record, Myths of Ancient Greece, which is not just for kids. I'm just so proud of this piece. I composed musicals when I went to performing arts high school, and many of the myths that I've written music for this record were the same stories I told my daughter when she was growing up. And I really, really feel there is a need for this kind of material for parents and kids, like for long drives if you're in L.A. like I am, or even just road trips or when you're putting kids to sleep or even in the classroom. I would have loved to have had something like this when I was raising Hannah. I just have to say on my own behalf, like, love this kind of material. Greek myths, which I'm happy to talk about if you want me to say anything more about that.
We will definitely talk about that. And one thing I want to ask you about, you just said the name Hannah. Is that your daughter's name?
It is.
Well, ironically, that is my youngest daughter's name as well.
Oh.
And she, my daughter is 15. She's Hannah Danielle, and she is at marching band practice tonight. But yes, she is now.
Oh, how wonderful!
She has her learner's permit, and you know how that goes—a teenager—and it is quite interesting day in and day out. But she is my youngest, my baby, and yes, Hannah was her appointed name. I knew early on in the pregnancy that she was going to be a Hannah. So,
my goodness, that's so exciting! And you know, it means grace. I'm sure you've heard this before.
Yes.
That the name actually means grace, which is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. You sound too young to have your youngest daughter be Hannah's. How can that be? You sound so young. My goodness.
Well, you know, how old is your daughter?
My daughter just started college. She's at NYU. It's so crazy.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, I will just toss that back to you. You sound young as well. I mean, and I have a son who is my middle child. He just started college also this year as a freshman. He's at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia.
So, yes,
and then my oldest daughter is 23, and I'm also a grandmother. I have a almost 17-month-old grandson. So it's, you know, I mean, it's maybe it's the love of life.
I know it's so wrong to say this because I know she has to get through college and has to have a life, but I have to say when I see those babies now, I'm just like, oh, my goodness, just to have a baby in the house would be so lovely.
Well, trust me, I understand why, you know, people are called grandparents because grandparenting is so different from parenting, and it is indeed grand. I'm very excited we have him, and it's been awesome so far. Well, I do want to talk to you about your album, but I also want to kind of touch on your stellar career. I mean, you've had, so much success, and I want to personally congratulate you on your outstanding career success because, you know, as I was reading in the intro, you've been in a lot of movies, you've been in television shows galore, you've worked with tons of people in the industry, and you have such an accomplished career. I mean, when you said, I feel so accomplished, you are accomplished, no doubt about that.
Thank you. I think it's just so odd, like, for anybody to hear someone listing, like, here's what you've done since you're 18 years old. It just could be, anyway, but yes, I feel very, very fortunate, and I've had a theater company with my husband as well here in Los Angeles, and I don't know, I do feel very lucky I've been able to live creatively. I think part of the secret, quite honestly, for me is to not live too high on the hog because then if you're feeling too stretched financially, you don't feel creatively like you can do your thing as much because it's just my little personal thing. I don't know. So, I mean, that's just sort of a, I guess, value type thing. But, yes, I've definitely gotten to work, which I'm really, really happy for, especially now that I'm getting older. It's so hard for women transitioning. I mean, I was in Supergirl and Legend of Billie Jean. I was 18, 19 years old. Ruthless People, I was 21. Secret of My Success, I was 23, I want to say. So really so super young for that kind of big, big roles. And for many of my fellow actresses that came up in the 1980s to transition and be playing moms now and be getting work, it's, you know, there's not that many of us that kind of hung in there with as much whatever. It's pretty tough in that way. But, yeah.
Well, it's really no surprise, Helen, that, you know, even after all these years in the business, I mean, you're still in demand. People are still tapping you for guest starring roles and roles here and roles there and movies and whatnot. I mean, I think we all came to know and love you in Supergirl initially. And I want to ask you about that because at that time, you know, you were very young. And when you were picked for that role and you were going to be, you know, starring alongside Faye Dunaway and Peter O'Toole, did you have any idea at that time just how big of stars they were and how remarkable actors they were?
You know what? I don't think I was that kind of the way I would be aware now. And the way I really know that I'm not aware is my daughter, who's the same age I was when this happened, I see her and her friends with just these giant, forward-looking, take-on-the-world, you know, and I think I had some of that youth kind of allows you to just do these giant, fearless steps, and you're not as, it's good. It's like you're kind of fearless a little bit, or at least I was, and I see Hannah is that way too, and it affords you this ability to be in the same room as a Peter O'Toole or a Faye Dunaway and not kind of just fall to your knees in fear. I have to say with Peter O'Toole, I had gone, as I said earlier, to Performing Arts High School where we had voice and diction and lots of acting classes, and he had me do Shakespeare for him. I had a Juliet, Thou Knowest the Mask of Night is on my face, and I did it very New York, you know, kind of my hands gesticulating everywhere. And he said, okay, now I want you to do it again and pretend you're holding two dandelions between your thumb and your forefinger. And then I did it again, very still, now my arms weren't flailing. I just did the poetry. And it was such an incredible acting lesson because I found that the Shakespeare really took off and there wasn't the distraction of whatever my New York flapping my hands was. So that was just an incredible acting lesson with him at such a young age to get that. It's pretty amazing.
Undoubtedly, and obviously something that stayed with you and it helped you to kind of build upon your career as time went on. And speaking of that, I mean, you've worked with so many phenomenal actors throughout your career, and who would you say has inspired you the most?
Oh, God, goodness. I mean, I've learned, you just learn from everybody. I don't need to sound like the old lady that's like, everyone can teach you something, but I really believe that with Peter O'Toole and Bette Midler, you know, their professionalism in the scene in Ruthless People where I have to tell her that Danny DeVito doesn't want to pay the ransom, she said to me, pretend you're telling me that I have cancer. So she said that to gave me such a great substitution that immediately I felt connected to and got so teary, the idea that you would have to tell somebody something like that. And at the same time, working with actors that weren't so professional, that taught me young age in my 20s, 30s, 40s, I don't want to be like that. I want to show up 10, 15 minutes early whenever I have to be on a job, because actors that would show up late, it was such a bummer and so disrespectful. So there were those kinds of lessons as well. And I got to work with the wonderful Russell Crowe in this little, beautiful little movie right before he became giant called No Way Back. And from him, I mean, he was just this incredible, his instrument just as an actor was so fine and deep, and I felt like my game was raised because of that, and so on and so on. I mean, really very privileged in that way to the lessons that I got as I went along.
Well, and oh my gosh, I mean, what a wealth of lessons and knowledge that you have gained, you know, just from being able to work with so many incredible people. But, you know, along the way, you've had numerous roles, and talk a little bit about a role that maybe was one of your more challenging roles.
It's funny. Just recently, I did a film. I actually was the lead in it called The Good Mother on Lifetime, and it was a really difficult role. I was playing a mother who's, this is an actual real disease where your children, you make your children kind of sick so that they will need you. It's called Munchausen by proxy, and that was really challenging to do a part like that. Very emotional. I would have to be in rages, like throwing things, enraged, and then kind of sensual, and then very tender with my children. And in terms of just stretching me, that was like an incredible part. And that was called The Good Mother on Lifetime. And really, that I would say, just in my recent memory that from acting, that was definitely one of them, for sure.
Oh, yeah, I imagine, especially if in your real persona, you know, real life Helen Slater, you're not like that, and then to have to get into character and play a role that is so dynamic, I imagine that probably stretched you quite a bit, no doubt about that.
It did. I've been part – oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I've been part of an improvisation troupe for years. My husband and I met doing improv. I still take class with Gary Austin, and I'm part of a theater company called the Boubelaires. And there's something about doing improv and being very playful that when you have these darker, more challenging parts, because you have those muscles, that's more lighthearted because you're used to making things up and just being in a state of play, it kind of makes those darker parts more easy because you can let it go more easily. I was able to let it go more easily, I think, just from my theater world. That was all I was going to say.
Well, that's perfectly well said, I must tell you. And you've worked, you know, speaking of the theater, I mean, you've worked film, television, and theater. And which aspect of acting do you enjoy the most?
You know, that's such a, I do enjoy all of it, I have to say. I'm particularly in love with theater right now because I'm back in a wonderful class with Gary Austin, who founded the Groundlings in L.A., and my husband, Rob Watsky. We do shows, Sunday night, these splat shows, and there's something so freeing about this format and learning to be in discovery on stage, and I just find it meaningful and It's very juicy right now. It's kind of my thing at the moment.
Well, and honestly, I mean, theater was kind of where you started and your first love, and then it kind of grew from there. And I think naturally it would almost seem normal for you to kind of want to gravitate back into that and feel most comfortable in it, because that's kind of like your familiar, you know, stomping ground, so to speak.
I think so. And quite honestly, for any actors that might be listening into this, once you've been doing this for a while and you're mostly in an auditioning world or interviewing to try and get parts, that can be really numbing and can be demoralizing at times. So when you have a class that you belong to or a theater environment where that's not part of it at all, you're really just doing the work, doing the work, doing the work. That it really is a good antidote to what can be really hard at times, just getting going for the next job and keeping your spirits up and all that other stuff.
Most definitely. And one of the things that I'm curious to, because to me, I consider you a veteran actress. You've been around for a while and you've done so many different things in the industry. And you know, I'm sure throughout your career, you've seen and experienced so many changes in the industry itself. And in your opinion, what do you consider to be some of the biggest changes that have taken place over time?
That's a really good question. I think not only for actors, but for everybody in the film and television industry, it feels more like a buyer's market. Like things aren't as handed out. I don't know how to explain it. It just seems that because there's so many talented people in all forms, directors, editors, writers, actors, that people are maybe not as trusting with their first instinct about things, but want to see 5 choices for a director, 4 choices for an editor, 8 choices for an actress, because they can, because this is the, it just seems to be what's in, and our union, SAG and AFTRA, has been through a couple of growing spurts, and I think that's also affected the ability, I don't know, I just think we're in a very interesting, things aren't, like in the 1980s and the early 90s, it was crazy how much money and work there was. And now, even though there's still a lot of work to be had, it seems like things have come more back down to earth, maybe because of the financial crisis in 2008, or I don't know, I never actually thought about it, so we're talking about it now. But things are more like a working man's environment, kind of. It's just a very few elite that are living in that rarefied world of parts being handed to them, directors getting jobs very easily, for all of us, not just actors I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is amazing to me. Even television itself, you know, and film, I mean, it's evolved, but then it's changed too. You know, it seems like television now is just predominantly reality TV at every turn. There's still a lot of good quality programming out there. But you know, I just remember back, you know, a decade ago, even, it was not as prevalent. And kind of taken shape. And I don't know if that's because the whole social media craze has evolved the way it has and everything is instant and people can, it's become such a society where everybody wants to be able to tap into it right now. And reality TV kind of feeds that, maybe.
I think it does. And I don't think we're going to really know the effects until like maybe 10, 20 years looking back at this period. Like, oh, this is a real birthing, real growing pains that our society went through. And now we've integrated it and we're back on to whatever the next thing will be. It's interesting.
Definitely. With everything that you've accomplished throughout your career, is there some aspect of this business that you still would like to delve into?
You know, honestly, I do feel like I'm getting to do everything that I want. In terms of the composing, I would say that's kind of my first love. You know, as you mentioned, I've made 4 records and I've workshopped 2.5 musicals that I composed. And there's something about that genre that speaks very dear to my heart. And my wish would be, now that I'm getting older, if I could, even in this educational music world, because the myths of ancient Greece, that's, it really is like definitely for kids and parents, but also it has it is educational in that you're really learning these myths. I would love, love the chance to do more of that, taking either more Greek myths or Hans Christian Andersen or maybe even Bible stories or Russian folk tales and bring those to light in an engaging way where you really get the true myth and you're getting compositions along with that. That seems, I'd be very, very just grateful to be able to keep doing that, if I'm being honest.
Well, and let's talk about this album, Myth of Ancient Greece, because I've not listened through it in its entirety, but I've listened to portions, and I must tell you, I'm so impressed, Helen. First of all, the concept is absolutely brilliant, because as I'm listening to it, it's kind of taken me back to that era in my life in school where we were taught, you know, about the myths of ancient Greece, and we've learned about the various gods. And it's almost sad in a way that today, you know, I could ask my children as they were growing up and in school, you know, have you learned about this? And they're like, it's always the same resounding no, we haven't touched on that, or no, we don't study that.
Oh, that's true. Gosh, that's interesting.
You know,
in California, they have, I think it's California, but maybe it's Los Angeles, fifth grade or sixth grade, they have a Greek study. That doesn't mean necessarily they'll get all the myths, but they will do Greek civilization, I want to say, fifth grade or sixth
mm-hmm.
grade. But maybe that's not United States across the board kind of thing. So that's really interesting. And yay, so you got to hear the stories again.
Yes, I loved it because that was always a fascinating subject for me when I was, in school and, you know, the whole mystery behind the gods and what they represented, and then to have you do this and put it to beautiful orchestration, and the narration is wonderfully done, and it's very engaging. I can't see any child not really getting into that. And I had the same experience.
Like when I was in third or fourth grade, I remember it was fourth grade. My teacher playing this really dinky little movie projection version of, it was the Demeter and Persephone myth, and I think Apollo and Daphne, and it had such an impact on me. I just remember 9 years old being just my mouth dropped open. I just thought that was the most incredible thing, that there was this myth that explained how the seasons came to be, because a mother was grieving, the goddess of the earth was grieving that her daughter had been taken away, and that's what brought autumn and winter. And when her daughter was returned to her, that's when the flowers bloomed again. And I thought that was just incredible. I still remember it like my, I don't know. And I had that love when we read the Odyssey in ninth grade, when I was in New York. I just thought, I mean, it really is like a love affair, me and the Greek myths, I have to say. Love
them. Would you say that that love that you have for the Greek myths is kind of the premise behind making such an album?
Definitely. And, you know, I think also because Hannah's an only child, and I think I dedicate the record, if hopefully your listeners will either, if they download it, great, if they order it and they get the actual hard CD, the record, I say this record is for Hannah, it, as a way of honoring just her leaving and going off to college and kind of saying, I hope I didn't freak her out too much. When the record was done, I gave it to her and I said, Hannah, I want you to know if anything happens to me, like if for God forbid something happens to me, this record, this CD has everything of what I value creatively and musically. Like, you can tell your children and grandchildren, if they're like, what was Grandma Helen like? You can say, okay, this CD is who my mother was. This was like her thing in life. I mean, I do feel very, very much like it was cathartic. It was a way of releasing Hannah out into the world, launching her into college. It was a way of kind of honoring all those years of driving her up to her school in L.A. on the freeways, telling her stories since she was very young, because she was fussy when she was young, and only storytelling would calm her down. Just have her in that car seat. And, I mean, it would be like for an hour or so, I would just be telling stories, made-up ones like this. And the record, there's secret nods to different stories that were not myths, but that I had also shared with her or told her growing up. So, yeah, that's part of what this came from.
Oh, and that is so neat how the nostalgia of those memories, your personal memories of that time with your daughter, have kind of become infused in this album. And now,
yes,
other, you know, this is the kind of thing that's perfect to pop in a CD player in the car. Like, I want to get a copy for my daughter and so she can pop it in and let it play for my grandson, because he can be quite precocious on long drives and stuff at times.
Yes.
And he is so... Already at a young age, he's very much in tune with, you know, he's trying to figure out how things are, and he's really zoned in on things, and he loves narration and things that are engaging like this, and I think he would love it. I absolutely do.
Yes.
I am definitely. But if you don't mind, I would like to play right now for the listeners the first cut off of the album entitled Opening, and can you give us a little background on this piece and how it was? I mean,
so
it's beautifully
done. You're just playing the song, I'm assuming, because the way the album is, there's narration and the songs sort of pop in. So right, if it's just the song you're playing, right before you hear this opening number, I do a narration explaining about Greek myths and how in Greek mythology these myths would help explain why things happened in nature. Why was there love? Why was there war? How did the seasons come to be? And mythology, Greek mythology, explained all of this. And in the opening number you're about to hear, I kind of list the 12 most famous gods and very shortly explain what each of their roles are. So I think that's a pretty good intro probably for that.
All right, well, here we go.
A long time ago, in ancient Greece, there were gods and goddesses that lived on a great mountain called Olympus. The myths of these gods helped explain why things happened. Why is there rain? Why do we fall in love or go to war? The myths of Greece explained all of this. Myths are stories that help answer some really difficult questions, like the myth of Demeter, goddess of the earth, and her daughter Persephone, which explained why there are seasons. Why do people fall in love? Cupid, the god of love who has a bow and arrow, shot one of his arrows into someone's heart, and Zowie, they love the first person they see. In Greek times, myths helped people make sense of the world. There were 12 super famous gods that lived on Mount Olympus. There were also lesser gods who roamed the earth, and sometimes even a human could be made into a god or a goddess. Or sometimes the gods might intervene on our behalf, like Perseus, a poor fisherman who foolishly promised to slay the monster Medusa, but had no clue as to how he would do it. Gods, goddesses, mothers, daughters, fathers, sons, monsters, wars, and endless stories of love are all part of the Greek myth. Come along and hear the stories told so long ago about the gods and goddesses who ruled the world below. Tragedies and comedies and tales of love and woe, and scary parts that flip our hearts as monsters come and go. A masterpiece, the myths of ancient Greece. Many gods, but 12 are the most well-known in the land. They dwell on Mount Olympus, where their lives are very grand. Joyful, jealous, sad, and mad, these gods make such a fuss. Making mischief, what fun this is, acting just like us. There's war, there's peace, the myths of ancient Greece. Zeus is the god of the sky, he is married to Hera, who tends to the home. Apollo, the god of the light, under the sea, Poseidon will roam. Hades, the god of the underworld, the Demeter, goddess of grain. Hermes gives message to Cerberus, dear Artemis, hunting for fun and for gain. Dionysus, the god of the dance, Athena is shielded in mighty. Hephaestus forges the fire, the goddess of love, Aphrodite. Come along and hear the stories told so long ago about the gods and goddesses who rule the world below. Kings and queens adventuring, and heroes on a quest.
All the gods will intervene when they think it's best. A masterpiece, the mist of ancient Greece.
Helen, that is just absolutely lovely. I mean, when I heard it initially, I wanted to just pull out all the books on, you know, ancient Greece, the mythology. I mean, it's a lovely song. It takes you on that journey and takes you back, especially if you studied it in school in my age. This is so your niche because all I could think about, too, was my grandson, how much he is going to get out of this. The music, he loves music already at such a young age, and the narration, the way you've gone about it, the singing, he's going to love this. I can't wait to get it for him.
Oh, I'm so glad. I hope so. I'd love to hear how he did. I hope he likes it.
Oh, you definitely will. And it's a wonderful album. And one question, I think you touched on this a little bit earlier, but do you see yourself doing similar projects as you move forward, you know, along, you know, kind of the same line?
Yes, I mean, that is my wish to keep doing this. It's hard to do it as a vanity project, but it is selling. So if I feel like no one is interested in buying it, then it would feel hard to just keep doing it for that sake. But it looks like it got released September 10th. It seems to be really doing well. There is obviously there's a Facebook page for Helen Slater and helenslater.com. You can get the record at iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. CD Baby has the best price for it, by the way, which I should just tell any listeners out there. but the wish is that I would like to see that it makes enough money to justify making the next one, and I absolutely want to keep doing this. I'm so passionate about doing these kinds of stories, making it accessible, not just for kids, but for adults too. Like, I would want something like this, even if I hadn't had Hannah, just having the stories retold in a way where I absolutely I'm just fetish about making sure the story is true to how the stories were told. Robert Graves, Edith Hamilton, Ovid, really using source material that was, you know, that is very classical and true. So I love that challenge of distilling and adapting it, but keeping absolutely the beats that happen in the story true to how it is in the more academia world, right? Like if you were studying it in college or even in high school or whenever.
Well, and I think anytime you set something like this to music, it catches on so much quicker. It's absorbed. It's remembered. I mean, I think about growing up, Schoolhouse Rock, and all those videos on ABC. And I think I did as well as I did in language arts because of those videos, and in history because, you know, if I got stuck, I just started thinking about the particular Schoolhouse Rock video and
exactly.
Song that went along with it, and it just kind of helped get me through.
Mention that in these Greek myths that I've picked, like in Echo and Narcissus, like in Psyche and Cupid, they're very emotional, you know, the themes of betrayal and loss in Psyche and Cupid, and then Echo and Narcissus about bullying and about friendship, and in Demeter and Persephone, that mother-daughter myth, and even in Orpheus and Eurydice, that story of love and loss and how somebody carries on when they've lost someone that they love. So they're very emotional and rich, but I think because it's accessible for kids, it doesn't pull you down under. You can still feel emotional about it, you know, but that is how culture should be. We should feel enriched by it or kind of moved by it. My wish is that the record will be moving as well as engaging and, oh my gosh, it's fun to hear this story, that kind of thing. So I'm hoping
definitely
that it works on both of those levels. Yeah.
Well, before we close out our show this evening, I'd like to play one more song from you, if I may. And it's the song, It's Not Nice to Be Mean. And can you share I heard that one, and I was like, oh, I am so going to play this for my grandson, too. I mean, your music is just, it came at the perfect time because he's just now getting to that age where, you know, he's starting to dance and try to sing along, even though he's still gibberish. But it's interesting to watch his growth and development, you know. But I would love to find out, you know, what is the message and meaning behind the song and something that you hope that listeners will take away from it?
Yes. I mean, this is sort of the anti-bullying song. This comes from the myth Echo and Narcissus. And very briefly, in the myth of Echo and Narcissus, Echo is just this little wood nymph who loves Narcissus, and he spurns her. He just doesn't know who her he is, and he really shames her. Like, he says, get out of my sight, and she runs away. But she has a great friend, this beautiful goddess named Nemesis, where we get that name. Nemesis means like enemy, but in originally Greek mythology, she was just this beautiful goddess. The Nemesis comes later where it comes from. Anyway, she takes Narcissus and says, she's the one singing the song to him about, and the idea being, you don't have to be mean. If you just want to say no to somebody, you don't have to be so bullying or teasing or mean. And that's really the message of the song, that there's a kind way to say no.
And it's a great song, by the way. I'll just say that.
Thank you
all right,
so much.
All right, we're going to go ahead and play this now.
It's not nice to be mean when it takes so little effort to be kind when you've seen how she laid her heart bare. What would it take to be polite? It wouldn't cost a thing. Don't you know it's not nice to be mean? You've got the world at your feet. Girls are hanging on your every word. They compete just to steal a glance. And though Echo took a chance, the truth you couldn't glean. Don't you know it's not nice to be mean? Beauty is not only on the outside. It's how you treat your friends that matters more. You may think this is a game, saying things that hurt somebody's feelings. Unashamed you go. So let me leave you with this. There is nothing in between. It's never nice, not ever nice. No thank you would suffice. It's never nice to be mean.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. I love your arrangement on that and the words. Oh, it's just a beautiful song.
Thank you so much.
Well, Helen Slater, it has been a true just treat and privilege to have you here with us this evening, and I can't thank you enough for being our special guest.
I've had a great time. You're a wonderful interviewer, so thank you for asking such great questions, and it was really, really interesting for me, too. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I truly appreciate that as well. And we'd love to have you back, especially when you make future albums along these lines. I'm going to kind of put it out there.
I will.
No, honestly, anything you have going on project-related, please. Or if you just want to stop by and co-host, that's great. You are absolutely awesome, and I thoroughly enjoy speaking with you. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
All right. All right. All the best for much continued success.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful guest, Helen Slater. I've loved her through the years, watching her do her thing, you know, between film and television, and she is just incredible, and she is a wonderful human being inside and out, and, you know, I love interviews like this, and her album is phenomenal. I love it. I can't wait to get it for my grandson. I'm so excited. Again, the album is entitled Myths of Ancient Greece, and it's available on iTunes, CD Baby, and Amazon.com. And if you would like to keep up with Helen on social media, you can visit her website at helenslater.com. On Twitter, she is Helen Slater NYC. And on Facebook, you can find her at Helen Slater Official. So that's a wrap, guys. Thank you so much to all the listeners who joined us this evening. And for Behind the Mic Radio, I'm your host, Dawn Mack. Have a great night, all, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio, where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us.